Baseline by Rageproof Rock, read by Scaly. He said no again, didn't he? Ronan smirks as he says it.
He's an idiot!
Rodney yells. He's an idiot who doesn't know the depths of his own idiocy. And even as we speak, he is ruining said depths. Ronan smiles fondly. So not only did he say,
he told me yes!
Rodney yells. He told me yes! And he had me wait behind the club for him for an hour. Then, when I reached the ceiling of frustration and the need to pee, I went back inside the club and found that they were cleaning everything up because he had left. You should give up, Ronan counsels. It's starting to fuck with your self-esteem.
My self-esteem has nothing to do with this!
Rodney finishes in a shriek, tossing his bag across the room where it hits the wall with a thump and slides to the ground, a disaster of back issues of Spin, digital recorders, concert flyers, club schedules, notepads and pens, jewel cases of demos, CDs, that dirty adolescent shove in his hands as he tries, relatively unsuccessfully, to escape their notice.
What this has to do with is the fact that I am filled with boiling hate!
Ronan rolls his eyes and wanders out of Rodney's office doorway, and Rodney shouts after him,
boiling hate!
In the afternoon staff meeting, Elizabeth touches Rodney's shoulders and soothes,
you really got to stop taking this so personally.
He is still bitter over. Radic stops, frowns, and turns to Ronan. What was the word? Being punked, Ronan says with a huge, toothy grin. Yes, Radic agrees brightly. Punked by Shepherd again. Ronnie attempts to claw the skin off his own face to express his frustration, but before he can launch into another lengthy diatribe about how his talent and skills are being wasted and are festering in this sort of work environment, Elizabeth clears her throat and says,
okay, tell me what you've got, guys.
Pegasus Records is small and intimate, nothing like the enormous corporate monolith of Rodney's former employers. But in his humblest, most inebriated moments, he knows he's lucky to be employed at all, after he'd fucked up and blown some of the most amazing talent in Canada for more than a decade. The first time Rodney heard John Shepherd, he was sitting in a bar looking for truth at the bottom of a glass of whiskey, and heard it on stage instead. Shepherd was under a naked light, sitting on a stool, hefting his guitar, sipping water and laughing with the sound crew. He waved thanks when they gave him the thumbs up, and then he stroked his fingers over the strings of the guitar, and Rodney found what he'd always been looking for.
Hey, jackass!
Rodney yells, and he watches Shepherd roll his eyes in the distance. No means no, McKay, he says placidly as Rodney barrels up to him, furious and panting for breath, putting one hand out to brace himself on a wall.
You lied!
Rodney accuses. It's true, John says, with faux sincerity. I've got to work on that.
Ha!
Rodney says with great triumph, and digs around his bag to produce a sheaf of paper, crumpled from long hibernation in Rodney's canvas bag, and creased from multiple foldings. But before Rodney can even find a pen with which to stab John's hand and make him sign his name in blood for his past sins, John adds, I'm not signing, Rodney.
You!
Rodney sputters, and he barely, just barely, resists the urge to slap John around with the contract.
You cad!
John stares at him.
Okay, wrong word, but still!
Rodney argues.
You miserable guitar-playing, Johnny Cash-listening, mixtape-making cockies!
John shrugs his shoulders apologetically, which only makes Rodney want to kill him more. I'm just not that into you, he says, putting a hand on Rodney's arm sympathetically. I'm sure you understand. When John turns to leave, Rodney gives in to temptation and throws the contract at his retreating figure, though it misses by a mile, and lands with a flop on the sidewalk, and earns him the bewildered stares of most of the people in front of the Strand. Rodney is starting to think like Glenn Close in Fatal Attraction, which means he's either got to sign this guy, kill him, or bear his children, and that is a line of questioning Rodney's not entirely comfortable with. That first night, right before the really terrible bands had come on. Rodney had shoved depressed teenagers and stoned employees out of his way left and right, yelling, "Move, move, move! Out of my way!" and burst backstage saying, "Oh my God, oh my God!" until he found Shepard pulling on a battered leather jacket. That was great. Well, it was not bad anyway. And he started. John had raised his eyebrows. "Did Elizabeth send you?" he asked. Rodney blinked twice and remembered she had suggested the bar that afternoon and pressed a 20 into his palm, told him he might find something he liked there. At the time, Rodney had thought she was telling him to go buy a hooker, but, and, well, given the way Shepard only looked mostly like a hooker, maybe she had sent him. Maybe, Rodney said. "How did you know?" John smirked. "You got that look about you." Rodney had shaken his head to dislodge the total ridiculousness of that statement and started again, saying, "Look, the point is, I'm not interested." John had cut him off. "But thanks for the offer. Tell Elizabeth to cut it out." And smiling, he'd gone away, leaving Rodney frozen with shock. Rodney had been pissed when he got back to the office at just after 2 a.m, and he'd gotten pissed at Elizabeth, whom he'd found asleep in her office, and proceeded to yell a whole bunch before she'd said, "But he was good," which shut him right down. "Well, it God," Rodney had muttered and stormed out again. The second, third, and fourth times Rodney had tried to bludgeon John into signing with Pegasus Records, he'd had to lock a representative from Virgin into a bathrobe and slip a guy from Columbia, one of Rodney's Ambien, to get a chance alone with Shepard.
"If nothing else, you should say yes because I'm starting to drug people to keep your attention," Rodney had yelled.
"That's really thoughtful," John had said.
"Are you listening to Metric?"
Radic boggles.
Rodney continues to lay stubbornly on the floor of his office. "I'm giving up," he declares. "On John."
Radic laughs and sits down on Rodney's chair. Radic is a sound engineer. Rodney has no idea why he's always hanging around the office and not the studio.
"You wouldn't."
"I am," Rodney says determinedly. "I'll find somebody better. I'll find the next broken social scene." Radic says innocently.
"Do not mention that band to me," Rodney warns.
"But you signed them," Radic smiles innocently.
"Almost."
Rodney rolls over onto his side and moans.
"Shut up. I hate you so much."
Radic pats his arm kindly.
"It is all right, Rodney. At least you will be remembered."
It's true. Rodney will be remembered. Not everybody managed to have.
"They punked me!"
In response to the perennial exclamation,
"Wait, you're that guy that fucked up signing Broken Social Scene."
Regardless of the number of times Rodney insists he was just trying to scare them into subservience, and the fuckers at Arts and Crafts got them in a moment of vulnerability, everybody just says,
"Feist, Jason Collette, Metric,"
over and over. And if they were Rodney's ex-boss, they also said,
"You're fired. Forever."
On Thursday, Rodney pays a guy who pays a guy and whines a whole bunch, until people give up and tell him where John lives, which is a south-facing one-bedroom near Washington Square Park, which explains a lot about why John's always at Strand, buying books about guns and bombs and Air Corps and World War II. Rodney gets to the apartment and sits on the stoop with a copy of the latest Scientific American, 3 chocolate bars, an iPod, and a fierce determination to stop being the laughingstock of the RIAA. Now that he's all about the RIAA.
"You just don't know when to quit," John says when he shows up. He's carrying groceries.
"This would all be so much easier if you bowed to my will," Rodney explains.
"It'll be good, Shepard. Seriously, it'll be so good. You'll have total creative control. It's a small label. There won't be any of the bureaucratic bullshit you'd have to deal with other places. And we'd never make you..."
"Okay, if you got divided to TRL, I think we'd have to make you go, but you could totally punch Carson Daly and we would back you up for the lawsuit." John rolls his eyes and says,
get off my stoop. It's not just your stoop, Rodney argues.
I don't want to sign, Rodney, John bursts out, frustrated. I don't want to sign with Pegasus. I don't want to sign with Columbia. I don't want to sign with Arts and Craft. Have those syphilitic whores been sniffing around you? Rodney demands.
I just don't want to sign, John finishes, irritated.
You're not, like, missing the opportunity of a lifetime here, or anything, Rodney.
I'm just not interested, period, full stop.
Rodney narrows his eyes thoughtfully.
What if I offered more money?
John throws a carton of milk at him.
He threw milk at me, Rodney sulks. Oh, thank God,
Carson mutters, and when Rodney blinks at him in confusion, Carson colors and says,
Oh, well, it's just there's been talk about those white stains on your shirt.
Rodney plucks at his Depeche Mode t-shirt and scowls.
Look,
Carson says, rapidly changing the subject,
perhaps this is an indication that you should put it behind you. It's not as if you haven't found other people, or that they aren't as good as Shepherd. Just let it go.
Elizabeth won't let me, Rodney whines.
Elizabeth already told you it was fine, Carson points out.
Okay, fine, Rodney concedes. Don't want to lose.
Carson laughs.
It's not actually a competition, Rodney.
That's what I thought,
Rodney hisses.
And then Art and Craft stole Broken Social Scene.
The next day, Rodney finds a mixed CD from John in his inbox. On a slip of paper tucked inside the jewel case addressed care of Rodney McKay of Pegasus Records is written, Track 1, Keen. This is the last time. Seriously, Rodney. Track 2, Jim. They. Because you're starting to make me paranoid here. Track 3, Feist. Mushaboom. Seriously, I'm okay with my boring life.
God damn,
Arts and Crafts, Rodney thinks. Track 4, Ringside. Tired of being sorry. Because I am. Track 4, Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah. Details of War. Well, okay, sorry about the milk. Track 6, Okay, Go. Invincible. You're not changing my mind. Track 7, Stars, The Vanishing. And if you keep trying, I'm leaving town. Track 8, Jameson Parker, Your Song. Not as romantic as the title. And just as Rodney's about to turn the CD player off, he realizes there's another song. Rodney puts it on repeat for hours, and lays there on the floor of his office listening to Joe Purdy talk about the rain and the sudden changes in the weather.
What the hell does your love of rain mean?
Rodney demands.
Language, Rodney, John says, laughing.
Oh, God, where are all these... Stop! Don't touch me!
Rodney says as an after-school swarm of grade schoolers gathers around curiously, tugging at his jacket and his bag and giggling uproariously, ducking behind John and peering out around him, until John finally says, Come on, guys, you should get on home. There's a terrifying Children of the Corn moment when all of them chorus,
Yes, Mr. Shepherd,
and a share pause before scattering off down the steps and sidewalks, melting into the city. So you really won't sign? Rodney asks out of sheer bloody-mindedness. John smirks.
It's a hobby, Rodney. I'm not even that good.
You're good,
Rodney snaps. John shrugs. Fine. So what? I have a job already.
Teaching fourth grade?
Rodney argues.
You should be begging for the debauchery and illicit fame of the recording industry.
At this, John laughs for real, loud and bright and clear. And adjusting a shoulder bag filled with times tables and fractions, John says, I'm playing a thing tonight. Rodney watches his profile for a minute before he yells,
Wait, wait, you're asking me out with a song about rain?
John turns around, and walking a few steps backwards, he yells into the distance between them, Come on, let's get something to eat before you get down to drugging rival scouts.
I hate losing,
Rodney calls after John. We'll figure out a consolation prize, John tells him when Rodney catches up.
Oh, consolation?
Rodney starts, but falters at the particular curve of John's mouth and says, "Oh, oh." The end.